CE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Severson. A federal judge has cleared the way for one of the Trump administration's remaining steps in its dismantling of the U.S. agency in charge of foreign aid. President Trump's announcing he's fired General C.Q. Brown as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, nominating General Dan Raisin Kane to replace him. Los Angeles County District Attorney Nathan Hochman denying the Menendez brothers the chance of a new trial, convicted in the 1989 killing of their parents. ABC's Alex Stone.
This is separate from resentencing, another argument that they're making, that they have been rehabilitated in prison. He said he has not decided on that yet. There is a hearing in March where they will talk about resentencing, and he said he'll get around to that and decide in the next couple of weeks.
A federal judge has reopened a lawsuit challenging Louisiana's execution procedures as the state prepares to carry out the death penalty using nitrogen gas in coming weeks. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Bucks beat the Clippers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks rallied in the fourth quarter, went on to beat the LA Clippers 116-110. After the game, players like Damian Lillard reacting to the news that Bobby Portis has been suspended 25 games for violating the league's anti-drug policy.
Obviously, it's a hit to our team. We're all professionals, and we know that we got to hold it down for him, make sure that we stay on track for when he does come back. You know, I think it'll make us a better team because we'll have to find a way without him.
The Bucks face the Wizards in Washington tonight. College basketball, number 16th ranked Marquette on the road against Villanova. Head coach Shaka Smart on how guard Stevie Mitchell has improved in his time with the Golden Eagles.
He was defending, he was flying around, he was bringing an incredible spirit and energy. That was his freshman year when he really didn't know what he was doing yet. Now he's a senior, he's more seasoned, he's way more confident, more secure, and we're absolutely going to need him to be at his best down the stretch.
That's Marquette coach Shaka Smart with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Carmelo Anthony for the Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, your innocence is proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. My Teamsters Union, its president, Sean O'Brien, has put an awful lot of political capital into making members believe that there are some good ones, some good Republican labor people in Congress and out there in the world. There's some good ones. And Donald Trump nominated one of those good ones to be the Secretary of Labor. Former Oregon Representative Lori Chavez de Remer represented the 5th Congressional District of Oregon. She was a good one. In fact, the Teamsters Union spent a lot of political capital, you know, labor for Lori, and, you know, Lori, a Teamster daughter, and, you know, all of this full court press. Because look, you know, and look, I gave Sean O'Brien credit. I said, look, the only reason this woman got nominated is because Sean O'Brien, the Trump whisperer, spent a lot of time, you know, kissing the orange behind. Whatever you want, dear Donald. You know, did a couple of thumbs up pictures, traveled to Mag-a-Lago. There was a lot of that. And it cost me a relationship. And look, that happens. But at the time when de Remer was named, I gave Sean O'Brien credit. I said, look, this is because of him. You got the best possible pick out of Donald Trump that you were going to get. And what we were sold is that she was a good one. She was going to be, she was Donald Trump's pro-labor pick. Well, during her confirmation hearing, not so much. In fact, the comment that's getting the most play is she said, if confirmed, my job will be to implement President Trump's policy vision. And my guiding principle will be President Trump's guiding principle, which means I'm just a tool. I'm just here to do what I'm told. That's it. Now, she has a record. She was one of three Republicans who signed on in the House of Representatives to the PRO Act, which is the Protect the Right to Organize Act. It would have basically overturned portions of Taft-Hartley, done away with right-to-work laws. Oh, boy, did Republicans not like that. And what's interesting is, boy, did she backpedal away by saying, well, you know, hold on, I supported it because I was a representative representing my district. And here's the kicker, I wanted a seat at the table. Because she now says it was an imperfect bill, so by having a seat at the table, I can only assume she was going to make it weaker. That was what the support was. Let's see how we can water it down even further than Democrats probably would have done it. But, you know, a lot of the other stuff that came up, for instance, Rand Paul went on about his love of right to work, of which she now says she fully supports and supports states wanting to protect the right to work. And, you know, Paul asked her, said, look, you know, you signed on to that PRO Act. Do you still support it? No. And this is the part I have a problem with. All of her supposed pro-labor stances, she ran from with Sean O'Brien and Teamsters in the gallery. They're looking on after putting so much into it. She's in favor of overturning the NLRB joint employer rule. She was happy with that. She supports the franchise model. And let's not forget, she's in favor of not having the ABC independent contractor rule. These are all labor's top legislative priorities. But somehow our media structure keeps saying she's a pro-labor pick because she was the daughter of a Teamster. And look, she may not be, understand what I'm saying here. She may not be as bad as anyone else Trump could have picked, but I don't think she's pro-labor. And she made that very clear. I'm pro-American worker, whatever that means. I'm in favor of corporate America being able to divide itself up to protect itself from organizing. I'm in favor of employees being gigged out. I'm in favor of ensuring that companies like Amazon are protected by having third-party logistics companies wear their uniform, drive their trucks, do their work, but not actually be employees. So I come back to, after watching the hearing, and I think she'll be confirmed. I think you'll get enough Democrats to help her get over the top, because you know you could get Andy Puzder or Eugene Scalia back. But this thing we were sold, that the Teamsters, my Teamsters union, spent a lot of political capital pushing, hasn't fanned out. Now understand, the joint employer rule should be one of the teams, should be the top priority for the Teamsters. Because if you're going to organize Amazon, you're going to need that decision in place. You're going to need the ability to say, you know, that Amazon truck that's driving up and down your street with Amazon written on the side of the door and a guy jumping out with an Amazon coat on and a guy delivering Amazon packages when Amazon tells him to do it, that person's not actually an Amazon employee. And if you can't say that that's an actual Amazon employee, you can't organize them nationwide. You might be able to get one or two here or there, but that's going to be near impossible to organize and raise up conditions. And what does that mean? Well, that means UPS is going to be in trouble, one of the Teamsters' biggest bargaining units. And that means the good wages, the good benefits, the good retirement package, the good working conditions, all of the things that UPS workers have fought over and fought for and gotten over the decades of fighting and winning contracts, that's all in jeopardy because Amazon paying poverty wages in deplorable conditions, going to pull everybody down. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at the Rick Smith Show.com. Is there a good Republican out there for labor? I'm not seeing it. Rick at the Rick Smith Show. Right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Chris Patton, former chairman of the British Conservative Party, was quoted by the New York Times. And again, this just shows these aren't conservatives we're talking about here in America. He says, we have Trump and his oligarchy of ignorant shoeshiners vandalizing the network of organizations, agreements, and values largely put into place by America since the Second World War, which have given us, most of us, including America, on the whole, an extraordinary degree of peace and prosperity. He goes on to say, I love America and was once happy to regard its president as the leader of the free world. Not any longer. Where are the American values that I used to admire? And look, this is where I keep saying, the rest of the world is watching. What they're doing is not popular, and it's not popular with Americans. There's opportunity. And here to share some thoughts on, well, just how bad it's going to get before it gets better, I've asked my good friend Doug Jones to come share some thoughts with us, former Alabama senator and, well, one of the brightest guys I know, somebody I wish was attorney general. Doug, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's always great to be with you. Thank you for those very, very kind words.
So what do you say, you know, about, you know, this British Conservative Party chair saying, look, I used to respect America. You wanted you to be the leader of the free world, wanted your values spread across the globe, but not anymore.
You know, look, Rick, I think he is spot on. This has been so just kind of demoralizing for people who believe in freedom and democracy and patriotism and have always believed that the United States of America is and was the greatest country on the planet and the leader of the free world. And to see what is happening now and the way that this administration is, you know, just literally cozying up to Russia, for God's sakes, to Vladimir Putin, the way that the vice president of the United States went to Germany, of all places, to cozy up to the far right and refuse to meet with the German chancellor. This is just a stunning turnaround that I'm not sure really anybody could have predicted. We knew that Trump would kind of be more pro-Putin in terms of trying to get this war ended because he wants to put the feather in his cap of ending this war. But to the extent that he has gone this week, I think the conservative in Britain is absolutely correct. I think people in Europe are alarmed and they cannot depend on the United States. And that is so unfortunate. And quite frankly, Rick, it's dangerous for America.
No, it is. I mean, and what it says is that we can't be trusted because literally in the middle of a war, we've switched teams.
Yes.
And look, when you've got J.D. Vance going to Germany and saying, you're not being nice to Nazis, I don't know if that's a good look for us.
No. Look, if there is any country in the world, even better than the United States, that has dealt with their past, it's Germany. And they have done things to make sure that people understand that they will never forget. And for Vance to do that, I think was just unconscionable, absolutely unconscionable. And for the president of the United States to switch teams within a 30-day period, to have a conversation with the Russian president, who is a ruthless murderer, and then come out and immediately start parroting the Russian talking points, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace, and it endangers United States national security.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, you know, like one of those pot calling the kettle black scenarios, where Trump called Zelensky a dictator. I'm like, I don't know. I was a little stopped by that. Look, a lot of things Trump does, you know, makes me scratch my head and go, I don't know where this comes from, but that was one of them.
Well, I mean, that, and in the same breath, he essentially said that Ukraine started the war, which if you hearken back is kind of what he said about January 6th,
yeah.
Completely changing the narrative.
Well, Ukraine did start the war, Doug. they did, because they didn't give their country away. They didn't go, oh, you want all of it? Well, by all means, come on in.
How could I forget? You know, but I'm going to tell you, Rick, that the sad thing is that there are, I believe, so many people in this country who do not follow that war, do not follow the news as much. And I'm not being critical of that. People just don't. They've kind of tuned out a lot of this, and they don't follow, and they don't see it. And if they hear Donald Trump say that, they're going to believe it. They're going to actually believe something that historically was absolutely not true. And that's why you still see his positives still hovering above 50% or right at 50%,
yeah.
Because people don't know. And I think it's up to Democrats and, quite frankly, members of Congress and the Republican side, too, who have strongly supported Ukraine, to call this out. They don't have to just completely, you know, come down hard and criticizing the president of their own political party, but they got to call it out for what it is and say that is absolutely wrong. And I think even Lindsey Graham said the good guy in this is Zelensky, not Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, but, you know, the profiles in Courage, there aren't many of those on the Republican aisle. Side of the aisle. I'm just sorry. You look at all of what's happened over the last couple of weeks and all of the power that they've abdicated to Elon Musk. the fact that nobody is standing up to these insane nominees. You know, for instance, Kash Patel as the head of the FBI. You lost me.
Now, look, I've been very disappointed that we've not seen more folks standing up on at least three or four of these nominations. Everybody did a lot to try to get the word out. And then they did both publicly and privately when Matt Gaetz was nominated as Attorney General. But since that time, there's only been one or two questions. And the minute that the Trump administration start threatening people with primary opponents and Elon Musk behind those primary opponents, they tend to kind of move back and fall in line. Yeah. And it's been pretty disappointing because I think the Senate Republican caucus has pretty much abdicated their responsibility under advice and consent on a number of these nominations. Not all of them by any stretch, Rick. I don't agree with a lot of these nominations in terms of their philosophies and what their political positions and that sort of thing. But that doesn't mean that they should be they're unqualified or in some cases, I think, should be disqualified from being in a cabinet post. And it's been pretty disappointing to watch, to say the very least.
Now, you look at Pete Hegseth and you go, I don't know how you got the job. But other than being on Fox News, which is, you know, obviously Donald Trump's favorite channel. But, you know, for me, I look at this Kash Patel as the ultimate in patronage hire, the ultimate in weaponization of government. Look, I know the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, you know, she's, you know, all in for Trump and, you know, and all in and going after his political enemies. I get it. I get the FBI now going to be in that. That's scary to me. But as I've been saying, the solutions will come out of the suffering. Those of us who will be attacked by these people will have to organize and find unity and find safety in numbers, because it's going to get ugly over the next year or two.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. And it's one of those things where there's going to be a lot of people hurt. I just hope that the country can survive, you know, some issues that we may see on a national security basis or domestically. People should not resort to violence, but who knows what's going to happen. But the main thing here, though, Rick, is I think you're right that as it sinks into folks that this is going to hurt a lot of people and it's going to hurt individuals. You know, we've talked before about how Tip O'Neill, former Speaker of the House, used to say all politics is local. And in today's world, when everybody's got their phones and they're doing this, it seems the more national. But it occurred to me the other day that at the very heart of today's world, all politics is personal.
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to take. When people see on a personal level the programs that affect them and what's happening that are being eliminated, whether it's the farmer who wants to send his grain or corn overseas, or whether it's a cancer patient who's being stopped from some kind of treatments or studies, people are going to start feeling some pain. And it's unfortunate, but that I don't disagree with you that is the only way that people may start questioning and second guessing their vote, number one, and whether or not we need some changes in this country, going back to some normalcy and some institutions that we can rely on.
No, you're absolutely right. And look, I have a lot of red hat friends and people that I deal with who aren't thrilled with what he's doing. Project 2025 was not popular, but it's their checklist. A lot of the stuff they're doing really not popular because eggs, you know, the whole reason for the election was the eggs. Eggs have never been higher and their lives aren't getting better. Because I've been saying, understand the suffering, the anger, the frustration, the fact that we were told if you worked hard and played by the rules, you're going to get ahead. All of that stuff is what makes us angry. And this is both sides of the aisle need to understand. And this is where I think you're right. Democrats need to get out in the streets. They need to do that local face-to-face organizing. There's only so much digital can do. There's only so much TV ads can do. You got to get out there, roll those sleeves up, and find Obama's comfortable shoes.
Yeah, no, there's no... Look, the one thing that I really believe that Congress can do is to get out of Washington, D.C. You know, they've got to be up there to take votes and to have some official hearings and all. But quit having Schumer and Jeffries press conferences. Quit running around to these buildings and pretending, you know, that you're going to break into the USAID. Go out to the public. Go out and have some mock hearings. Congressional Republicans are never going to allow field hearings to be an official congressional hearing. But that doesn't mean that the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee and the Democratic House Campaign Committee couldn't sponsor some of these and have members of Congress go into these red states, go into these districts and have hearings, Rick, not town halls where it's just you're talking to a silo and your own friends, but have hearings where people come and literally can testify about how all of this is affecting them and the communities where they live. That's what's going to get the local news. That's what's going to get people's attentions. It's what's affecting them and their communities and their neighbors. Congress needs to get out of the D.C. bubble and get out into the country.
No, the absolutely spot on, 100% agree. Been arguing that for that for a very long time. In fact, probably about 20 years now. look, I've always said that the Democrats are weak. You know, in a street fight, they'll offer to hold your coat. I think that's how we've lost a large portion of the working class. People are suffering. People are struggling. Prices are high. Wages are low. Rents are through the roof. Everything. Life has gotten much more complicated, much more difficult, and people are struggling. They need to feel that there's a champion. And I think, unfortunately, they look to Trump and to Musk, who are the worst people to be looking to for any help. But they see them as strong, and they see them as, I got an agenda, and I got a vision, and I'm going to help you. I think Democrats need to start not literally punching people in the mouth, but we need to start balling up the digits, Doug.
No, I agree. But you got to admit that part of what they see in Trump and Musk is simply, well, doggone it, they're doing something.
Right.
And I can't argue with that. Okay. I can't argue with that. But the reason why I think folks have got to get out of that DC bubble and get to people is because if we don't, Trump's going to control the narrative, and he's going to be able to say false information like Zelensky and Ukraine started the war, and people are not going to know any better. We've got to go where people are to both hear them, listen to them, and talk to them and tell them why this is happening, why that these cuts to the FAA is going to hurt the safety of people when you get on an airplane or a train. They're going to have to hear a lot of this and feel it a good bit, but we're going to have to get out into the country to do it. We cannot rely on corporate media and social media to do it.
No, no. You're parroting what I've been saying for two decades now. Doing this is we need people to tell real stories of real working people and for those to be heard. And I couldn't agree with you more than a lot of my friends believe that Republicans right now somehow, in some weird way, have their interests at heart. For instance, and I'm sure you watched the confirmation hearing of Lori Chavez de Remer, who my union, the Teamsters Union, put a lot of political capital in getting her the nomination and spent lots of time saying, you know, Lori for labor for Lori and all this stuff, only to have her testify that labor's main priorities, all of them, not something she stands behind. In fact, something she would overturn following Trump's policy. And it's just, again, it's another one of those things where
it's a different kind of confirmation conversion that she had, because she is the only Trump nominee who was being criticized for policies from Republicans. And she had to have a confirmation conversion on labor and organized labor in order to shore up support for her nomination to get through, because she was at risk. She might would have gotten more Democratic votes had she not said that. But she doesn't really need the Democratic votes.
No, I agree.
She needs all of those Republicans.
No, I absolutely agree. But you know, here's the point. The Teamsters need that joint employer rule to be in place. Mm-hmm. She came right out and said, I was right. I was in line with them overturning it. She said, I believe in, you know, right to work. She said, I believe in the franchise model. She said, you know, I was only signing on to the PRO Act because I wanted a seat at the table, which means she wanted to make it worse. you know, for me, all of that stuff tells me there are no good labor Republicans. Sorry, as much as Sean O'Brien has put into, Josh Hawley and the Mark Wayne Mullen and the rest of them, there are no good labor Republicans. No, sorry.
I haven't seen any. I haven't found any. At the end of the day, they are not going to support organized labor. They didn't support organized labor on pensions and any of those things. So you don't expect it going forward, and it's getting worse.
So last line of questioning I got for you, because look, I get a lot of people going, what do we do? You know, Rick, you know, the sky's falling. And I've taken a tone of, look, the country's been through these kind of things before. We had to go through the robber baron era to get to the FDR years. Now, there were a lot of years between that were, you know, painful and lots of struggle and lots of suffering. But the country's been in rough times before. I have great faith in this country. I love this country. I love the people. But, you know, we're going to have to go through some stuff.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But I also think that people need to, in a very civil way, to let their voices be heard. They need to call. They need to write. They need to tell people in some of these congressional offices how these policies are affecting them in an adverse way. Ask them questions. Make them provide answers and continue to do that. And even folks like in Alabama, if you're a Democrat, and you don't think your voice is going to matter, it really still does. Make that call anyway. You may not change a vote, but you're setting down markers and you're making it known, and you're going to be talking to some folks in the media, and you are going to be doing the social media thing. And there will be times when it's time to go to the courthouse or it's time to go somewhere else in a very peaceful way to demonstrate your objections to what's going on.
Right there's the difference between Democrats and Republicans. You're talking about doing it in a very peaceful way. They're talking about hanging the vice president. So a very different approaches.
I'm not gonna get into that though. I'm never gonna go down the rabbit hole of trying to call for violence. We just can't do that.
No, you know? nothing's accomplished by that because you give them a reason to crush you. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree with you. Doug, as always, I appreciate the time. Hope you'll come back. If we're still doing this, if they haven't shut us down by then, because who knows, with Kash Patel as the head of the FBI, who knows where I will end up. But Doug, I appreciate the time as always.
Hey, buddy. Anytime. Great to be with you.
Thanks so much. Our good friend Doug Jones. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you one of the skies falling folks or like me? We'll get through it. Together, we come together, we organize, we're each other's support, we're each other's security. We'll get through it. I want to hear it, though. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and not as cold tonight, a low of 5 to 10. Mostly sunny and warmer tomorrow, a high around 30 and near 40 with increasing clouds Sunday. Much above average temperatures continue through next week with some minor chances for rain. Right now it's 16.
The Todd Alba Show.
Elon Musk putting in so much money that it drowns out other people's voices to decide who our next Supreme Court justice is. Whether or not you're going to vote Republican or Democrat or Schimmel or Crawford, your voice is getting drowned out by Elon Musk, a guy who has no business in Wisconsin. And you don't think that Brad Schimmel is going to be in Elon Musk's pocket? It's going to affect us in Wisconsin.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's weird. We hear how newspapers are dying because ad revenue's down, right? We keep hearing this all the time. Newspapers are, they're dinosaurs. Well, you know, the Washington Post, owned by one of the richest guys in the world, evidently doesn't need ad dollars because the folks over at Common Cause, along with a collaboration with the Southern Poverty Law Center Action Fund, they were going to post an ad, $115,000 in revenue to the Washington Post. And that ad was pretty simple. Fire Elon Musk. And look, if you're Bezos, you know, what better than go after another billionaire, perhaps? Or maybe not. When the oligarch are together, what do we have? Well, evidently he didn't need the money and they turned down the ad. And here to share some thoughts on how, why, what? I've asked Aaron Sherb to come talk with us. Aaron is Senior Director of Legislative Affairs with the folks at Common Cause. You can check out their website, commoncause.org. Aaron, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on again, Rick.
So am I getting this right? You guys went to put $115,000 into Jeff Bezos' pocket just to put an ad in his newspaper, and, well, they turned you away?
That's correct, unfortunately. We had signed a contract with the Washington Post over a week in advance to run our ad the Tuesday right after President's Day, so the 18th. Sent the ad to the Post 7 days in advance, so February 11th. Nobody raised any concerns about it. Then Friday, late afternoon on February 14th, right before the weekend, the Post informed us that they would not run the ad. They didn't tell us why. You know, we'd offered to make changes, but they said they wouldn't run it and would only, you know, they could only do like a kind of an abbreviated version, you know, somewhere inside the paper. So, you know, never got any explanation, no, you know, nothing in writing or over the phone from them, but they just, you know, so we decided just to scrap it completely because we, you know, that is not what we signed a contract for.
So the ad, you know, simply asked the question, who's running the country, Donald Trump or Elon Musk, right? That's what I got from the ad, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Just, you know, fire Elon Musk, you know, saying, look, Americans elected a president. We're only allowed to have one president at once, not two. You know, and it certainly is not Elon Musk, despite what he is trying to make it seem sometimes. So we're just trying to call attention to his, you know, Elon Musk's role in government. And, you know, that was all the ad was attempting to do.
Yeah. And to get people to go to your website, obviously, which was aptly named firemusk.org, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the hope is right now everyone's running to their computers and going firemusk.org to get as much information as they can and to maybe act to hopefully this gets a lot more attention than a Tuesday ad would have got you in the Washington Post. So could you argue Bezos did you more of a favor by turning you away than taking your money?
Yes. Yeah. A reporter jokingly called me and said that we should owe them way more than $115,000 that the ad was going to cost in all the media attention that this got afterwards from them declining our ad.
Because here's the thing. This is our fourth estate. This is supposed to be the people reporting the news and doing the outreach to the people. It seems to me that the number one stream of revenue thing there, that I don't know why you'd turn that away. Without explanation. Yeah. This is the part that gets me. If they came back and said, look, we're just staying out of politics, which is stupid, and not something I'm sure they would say. If they said that, okay, there's an argument. But you got nothing, right?
Yeah, no response at all from anybody in the advertising department or anywhere from the Post. So, yeah, obviously now that Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, you know, they've made some controversial moves in recent years that are, you know, directly tied to some of his decision making, presumably. You know, they stopped a planned editorial page endorsement for a certain presidential candidate last year. You know, they stopped a planned editorial cartoon that was very critical of Donald Trump. Jeff Bezos has brought in a number of top executives with backgrounds who came from Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, which has provided very favorable treatment to Donald Trump. So again, no explicit reason was given, but, you know, just connecting the dots between all of those things and them pulling our ad, you know, it certainly is kind of a head scratcher for why they did what they did.
Yeah. So everyone right now, go to firemusk.org. Firemusk.org. Do that on your phone, on your computer, wherever you got to go. It would be great to see that spike. But here's the question that I then come back to. You know, how much control of our media does Musk and Trump have? I mean, I look at the situation that's going on with the AP and how Trump is restricting access to the White House and to Trump over the fact that the AP refuses to call it Gulf of America. That's it. I mean, everyone else basically fell into line. But Trump says, well, they aren't doing me any favors, so I'm not doing them any favors. That's not the role of our media.
Well, yeah, first off, Elon Musk is just a symbolic figure of the Trump administration's abuse of power. You know, he's probably one of the most visible, you know, kind of bad guys among many in this, you know, in this situation. But I think it goes to the situation goes to a much larger problem within our kind of very, you know, big corporate-owned media conglomerates, you know, with Elon Musk owning Twitter, you know, now called X, you know, censoring certain opinions, censoring certain perspectives on the platform, suspending certain certain accounts from Twitter that he finds, you know, offensive or, you know, doesn't like those points of view. And then certainly, yeah, the AP being banned from certain media briefings now because they refuse to use the government's approved language of, you know, quote unquote Gulf of America. You know, it's just repulsive, and it's heartening to at least see media companies, you know, across the spectrum of all viewpoints coming together and saying no, the AP should be allowed in these briefings because they provide a valuable public service. They provide a key role to helping to educate the public. And so everyone from I think OAN to Newsmax to Reuters and many others signed a letter to the White House saying that the AP should be brought back into these briefings. So that's at least one small sign of hope.
No, I mean, what they should be doing is every time there's a press briefing, the only question that gets asked is, hey, where's the AP? We're not asking you any questions until where's the AP? And if you had that kind of solidarity and saying, look, we're not going to let anyone get frozen out, maybe it stops.
Yeah, it's hard to know, you know, how this plays out. But yeah, I agree. Something, you know, these are drastic times, and you know, it calls for drastic measures to be taken. And so obviously the Fourth Estate, you know, the journalists, independent media is extremely important to a functioning democracy, and making sure that all Americans can be aware and can be educated about what is going on in government and public policy. So having an independent, strong role of journalism is incredibly important to preserve our democracy.
No, I mean, but I watched a clip of Trump where he's talking about, you know, the AP, and he's talking about, you know, they don't like Trump. They don't do anything for Trump. You know, and this whole third person thing is just it's always been weird to me. But I go back to that. They aren't doing me any favors. I'm not doing them any favors. That's how it's done. That's the thinking of this White House. And it's that kind of tit for tat, that kind of retribution or payback kind of thinking that we really need to have a Fourth Estate. They are constitutionally protected. It's the only job in the country that is, so that we're informed of this stuff. So I'm concerned at a level that I've never been before, that our media structure, just for profits and ratings and all that, have just, well, whatever you want, dear leader.
Yes. Yeah. This administration is very transactional, and you know, everything seems like a quid pro quo, whether that's written or verbal or just understood. And so it's an extremely challenging moment to be an independent media company, you know, one that's not owned by controlled by a billionaire like Jeff Bezos or you know, Twitter, or, you know, kind of social media platforms. So yeah, we need to have an independent media, independent journalists who are allowed unfettered access to be able to do their jobs and not be filtered, not be censored, to use only approved language, because that harkens back to a really scary time in the world's history when you know, dictatorships attempted to do that.
No, that's the scary part, because heaven forbid you say gender affirming care or undocumented worker, that's, their minds go crazy. The website again, firemusk.org. I want to go back to this Washington Post story, because what was the point of the ad? Why did you go through this? Obviously, I know firemusk.org. You want to, but what made you go, hey, we're going to raise $115,000 to get people to, what do you want folks to do once they get to firemusk.org?
Yeah, well, first off, you know, President Trump has essentially elevated Elon Musk to have the power to run our country with essentially no oversight. It's an insult to the millions of Americans who voted for Trump, as well as those who didn't. You know, Americans expect President Trump to run the country himself as president and not outsource the job to megalomaniac, you know, like, you know, Elon Musk and kind of big tech companies. We launched this Fire Elon Musk campaign to help raise awareness about Elon Musk's government takeover. To help educate the public about Elon Musk and what he's doing in his role as quote unquote special government employee, you know, serving his own corporate agenda, and really, you know, moving, you know, hopefully moving President Trump to fire Elon Musk and reasserting his own himself as his own control as commander in chief. We're urging voters, taxpayers across the ideological spectrum to sign our petition demanding that Elon Musk be removed from any position of influence within our government. Now, because he was personally not elected.
You said, you know, you don't want the presidency outsourced. Well, who's going to do all that golfing? That golfing isn't going to do itself. We need Donald Trump out there in the links, man.
Look, the presidency is a difficult job, probably one of the most difficult in the world, and it requires being on call 24/7. And so, look, if Donald Trump is not up for it, then he should not have run for president again. But, you know, the American voters chose him ultimately, and so he's got to be up for the task to run the day-to-day operations of the government and not outsource this to some unelected, billionaire who doesn't begin to understand anything about government and is treating it as if it's like a corporation or a big business that he's run before.
Last line of questioning I got for you, because you hit on a topic that's been near and dear to my positioning. During the campaign, I heard a lot of people say, you know, I want the government to run like a business. And which I usually ask, do you work for a business? Yeah. Do you like your boss? Well, no. You want him running the country? Well, but it's this concept of running the government like a business, where the boss is the dictator and everyone else are the servants. I mean, Pennsylvania workers' compensation law still considers the employer-employee relationship master and servant. Isn't that what we're seeing? We're seeing government being run like a business? A bad business, but like a business?
Look, their government fulfills many important functions that should not be making money in plenty of cases. You know, providing critical air traffic safety for individuals, defending and protecting the homeland from attacks, foreign and domestic, making sure that we have safe food to eat, clean air and water to drink and breathe. You know, these are essential responsibilities of government that often will not make money, and in fact should not if they're doing a good job.
Yeah.
And so it's just government is, you know, there are plenty of ways that government could be run more efficiently, but just like carte blanche, you know, eliminating positions, you know, getting rid of FAA, you know, air traffic controllers right after there have been several critical incidents, airplane incidents. It just sends the wrong message that, destroying government at a time when we need it most.
No, absolutely. But, you know, that's such 20th century thinking. The 21st century, Aaron, is about freedom and liberty and, you know, small rebates.
Look, they came in with this preconceived notion that government is bad. And in fact, once they start to strip away parts of the government that people actually like, that citizens across the ideological spectrum like, national parks, having access to being able to explore our vast national parks. Once people see, you know, the long lines and the backups at national parks, I think people will be wishing that they actually had more government there. When we see egg prices continue to increase because they're pulling inspectors from farms at some places that might be having a bird flu in them. You know, when people are getting sick from bird flu, I think we'll want more government inspectors to making sure that our egg supply and our food chain is continues to be safe and secure. So I think it's government can be an easy punching bag until something happens, and then people will be clamoring for these services that they've long taken for granted.
No, you're absolutely right. The website, firemusk.org. We'll get links out on social media. Aaron Sherb, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing some thoughts. Good luck. The next time you run an ad, let me know, because I want to make sure that gets canceled too.
We are looking at some other options, so I will be sure to keep you posted.
Senior Director of Legislative Affairs there with Common Cause. Make sure you check out their website, commoncause.org. But first, go to firemusk.org. If for no other reason than just to send a message that, hey, don't go banning the ads, man. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1868. That was the day that the governor of California signed into law the 8-hour workday. The law was the result of a strong organizing effort led by California's trade unions. The call for the 8-hour day had gained traction across the U.S. labor movement after the Civil War. In the San Francisco area, the Carpenters Union helped lead the effort. Other trade unions soon joined the cause. They held a parade in June of 1867 that saw more than 2,000 laborers marching in the streets. The marchers were organized in order of when their union local had adopted the 8-hour platform. Ship joiners, bricklayers, lathers, and more joined the carpenters in a public demand for a standardized workday. The trade unionists also organized politically. They backed candidates to the state legislature that supported the 8-hour cause. Their efforts got results. An 8-hour bill was introduced. Sadly, it excluded agricultural workers, but the bill was passed and was signed into law. In San Francisco, the trade unionists celebrated their hard-fought accomplishment. Workers from Oakland sent representatives to join the parade. The law went into effect 60 days after it was passed. But like many of these early laws regulating wages, hours, and conditions, the law did not include the mechanism for enforcement, leaving an opening for employers to skirt the law. Soon after its passage, shortage and economic depression further impacted enforcement, as hard times led many workers to take jobs that violated the law. Despite the legislative victory, the battle for the 8-hour day had not been won. The labor movement had to continue its fight for 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, going to be an interesting weekend. Some fun and entertainment. Donald Trump's going to be speaking at CPAC. I wonder if he's going to hug the flag again. I wonder if they're going to roll out Golden Trump. I wonder if Matt Schlapp is going to grab any young boys. It's going to be an interesting weekend to see nonetheless, but scheduled to speak on Saturday. Also, speaking of gold, Donald Trump has vowed to make sure that there's gold in Fort Knox. And when he's done doing that, he's going to go to Grant's tomb to make sure Grant's there as well. But he said, we're going to go to Fort Knox, the fabled Fort Knox, to make sure the gold is there. If the gold isn't there, we're going to be very upset. Oh, do you think Trump's going to get pictures of himself sitting on the piles of gold? Do you think that's the fantasy of his? Do you think that's like never mind. I'm not going to talk about pee tapes. Not doing it. Not going there. But here's the weird thing. The weird thing is I think people are, again, remembering why we wanted him gone, a little over 4 years ago, because it's been chaotic. It's been a fire hose of insanity, a fire hose of chaos. And, as military.com pointed out, infinite nightmares at once. So here we are. But the weird thing is, I think the American people, some of the polling going in a direction that we're waking up to the reality that not really working for us. Egg prices still up, gas prices still up, grocery prices. I went to the grocery store the other day, spent $150, and I was able to carry it in a couple of bags with one hand all the way into the house. Very, very, very expensive trip I did take. But the reality is, I think of the majority of people really not thrilled about Musk. And the weird thing is this could be one of those great organizing moments where you see someone like Musk who has just unimaginable wealth. The vast majority of Americans can't imagine what you would do with the kind of wealth that Musk has, other than buy government, other than buy a country, other than impose your will on humanity. World domination, of course. But what's interesting is some of the polling, and again, not surprising to me so much, but 71% in the one poll said that they think the wealthy have too much influence in Trump's administration. Now, I would argue, I think the wealthy have too much influence overall. But when 71% of Americans agree on something, I don't know. Now, the weird thing is you go through some of the polling and you watch some of the comments. For instance, 59% of people polled in this Reuters Ipsos poll said that they were in favor of downsizing government. But, and this is the part that gets me, this is the part that kind of makes me chuckle. I'm in favor of downsizing, in favor of slashing, burning, doing all that. But I just don't want service disruptions. I want what I want. I want it cheaper. And that is such an American thing. Going, yeah, screw everybody else, just as long as I got mine. And that really is the Reagan era coming out in us. Hooray for me and the heck with everybody else. And this is what Musk and Trump have been playing on for a long time, because they play to a lot of our anecdotal beliefs that there's all this waste, fraud, and abuse. That, there's these enormous amounts of giant piles of cash just being burned into a hole. When the reality is some of the stuff that they've come out with, you go, really? That's the best you've got? Couple of bucks here, couple of bucks there? Hey, Elon, let's go through Tesla. Let's go through SpaceX. You want to run things like a business? Let's look at what corporate America does.
oh, we can't do that. Because then we realize that waste, fraud, and abuse isn't only supposedly in government. Now, I go back to the opportunity, because the working class of this country looks at our oligarchs now in a very, very jaundiced way. You've got someone like Elon Musk, who I would fairy to guess has never missed a meal, never worried about where he's going to lay his head, never worried about where one of his brood of children are going to go to school, or if he worries about them at all. Whereas most Americans, they do. And it's this massive disconnect. What we are seeing out of Elon Musk is nothing than misery porn on steroids. It's about causing as much damage as possible with some misguided view that somehow, maybe, I can pretend like I care. The weird thing is 53% of the people oppose Doge. 62% of the people rejected Trump's firing people. The majority of people are not on Trump's side. But here's the thing. Doesn't matter. Doesn't care. Does not care about you. Doesn't care about working people in general. Never has, never will. Not going to happen. Wake up to reality. This is a power play. This is all it's about. Now, what I find interesting, and it's one of those things that you just kind of have to chuckle in a way, because Steve Bannon, someone who you could argue made Donald Trump who he is, has come out now and said that he believes, told CNN, he believes our oligarch, our oligarchs are going to tire of Trump. He said, quote, they seek power. Right now, their feeling is they can see the math, and they see that we've built a coalition. So they're with us, but only temporarily. Understand that they've got government by the you-know-whats. They don't need Trump so much. So will they abandon Trump like they did, everybody else? Yeah, in a heartbeat. And it'll be interesting to see, because everyone's waiting. I've said this from the beginning. The interesting part of all this is watching when Trump and Musk have their bromance broken up. Whatever it is, however it happens, that's going to be the interesting part, and where the pieces lie. This is a game well above the average working person's head, and we should never have this. We should never have a president with the kind of power that Trump is seeking to grab, and we should never have one individual in this country that has the kind of power that can shut down governments. And I understand, we have this idealized, vision of the individual that, we can all rise up and be Elon Musk. Sorry, no. This is a country of, for, and by we the people. Not Elon Musk alone. Elon gets a vote. But when he's got almost half a trillion dollars, does he get half a trillion votes? Republicans have fallen in line, and they're going to. They are going to fall right smack into line, because they know they got a cushy gig. They don't have to get their hands dirty. They don't have to go out in the hot sun and work and slop tar on a roof. They don't have to get splinters in their fingers, building a house. They don't, nothing. They got an easy gig. Just as long as they stay in line. Because with the kind of outweighed wealth and power that our oligarchs have, our Musks and our Bezoses and the rest of them, they can easily throw a gazillion dollars at a race and make an example of someone. And Republicans have learned the lesson. And look, some Democrats have too. Don't get me wrong. There are billionaires on the Democratic side, and I'm not overly thrilled about that either, which is why I keep saying, and I've been saying it for 20 years, I am in support of publicly funded elections. Sorry, billionaires, no, you don't get to run the country. But, for the rest of us, interesting to watch. Now, as I said from the beginning, I'm optimistic that we're going to find our way, and that our organizing should be with each other. Red hat, blue hat, green hat, pink hat, don't care. Suffering is going to be across the colors. And that For me, that's the future. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said made you think, made you angry, made you happy, made you sad. By all means, reach out, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast, freespeech.org for the video. As always, thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Trump announcing on social media that he's firing two members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, including the chairman, General C.Q. Brown. No reason given, nominating Air Force Lieutenant General Dan Raisin Kane to replace him. Also fired was Admiral Lisa Franchetti, the chief of naval operations. The president saying he directed Defense Secretary Hegseth to seek nominations to get five additional high-level positions. President Trump at the White House saying the U.S. and Ukraine are pretty close to achieving a mineral rights deal as part of a broader peace deal with Russia.
We're signing an agreement, hopefully in the next fairly short period of time, that will assure us that we'll get $400 or $500 billion back.
Three people were shot and killed in a parking lot outside a driver's licensing office in Louisville, Kentucky today, police say. No arrests yet. Concern over tariffs led to Wall Street indexes closing lower. This is ABC News. There's a search underway in San Diego for a person who murdered a Cal Fire captain.